Blog Talk Radio.
I mean, from Hawaii, all the way out to Dallas, Texas. So good morning. Welcome on the call. Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome on the call. And you'll probably hear my voice sounds a little tired this morning. And the reason is, you know, I started putting this call together at 4 a.m. this morning. You know, we worked last night, as you know. We were up early for the call that was yesterday. We sat down last night at 4 a.m. to get the call ready today because it is busy, busy, busy. We have not stopped because there are so many things that are happening in order to get everything ready for Dallas. And we truly want to lead by example, give it no excuses, get everything done, and go out there and make it happen. Because we feel so proud to be part of, to work with, lead, and be the creators with, and the co-creators with, team and spirit. We are making things happen. And last night, it's 4 o'clock in the morning, and I was reading last night, and I read, and I was going, wow, I'm still not sure exactly what it is that I want to do the call on this morning. And as part of last night, we were looking to put a design together for something that we were doing in Dallas, Texas. And we were looking for some ideas. We were looking for some creative input. We were looking for something that would help us. And very often when I have those ideas, when I'm looking for that creative insight, one of the things I like to do is to go to Google, use that search string that would illustrate or would be descriptive of what it is that we're looking for. You know, perhaps it's looking for whatever it is. And as many of you know, I went to college in Germany. And as part of this process, I was looking and I came across a story from Nuremberg. And this is a story that I was familiar with. That's a story that I had heard before, but I wasn't thinking about it till yesterday. But it illustrates so beautifully a point that I would love to make and something that is so true to every single one of us. This is a story back from the 15th century, and I want you to know that it is so applicable today as it was back then. In fact, maybe it was because it was 4 o'clock in the morning. It actually made me cry. I started to think about this story and thought, how true is this? You know, it's a story about a tiny, tiny, small village near Nuremberg. We always know that a village is small when they don't even name it because they know most people couldn't find it. They say where it's near. And we're talking about times of extreme poverty. We're talking about times of extreme harshness. We're talking about a large family that we're trying to bring, keep life and limb and soul together. And the father, the head of the household, was a goldsmith by profession. And he worked almost 18 hours a day. They described the painstaking work that he did other chores around the village, that he would walk miles, he would do anything that it took in order to put food on the table for his family. He was a man of faith. He was a man who believed in his family. He believed in his responsibility. And no distance was too far. No amount of work was too hard. And he truly did everything he could. Even with all those harsh conditions, even with the extreme back-breaking physical labor over an 18-hour period, he always prayed. He optimistically believed in his faith. He truly believed in his family. He always smiled upon them. He always encouraged them. He always said that if you pray and believe in God, if you truly focus on your family and helping one another, that if you see your dreams, that what you see on a daily basis and you work hard for, eventually will come into being. So despite the seemingly hopeless conditions that these guys lived in, two of his sons, Albrecht and Albert, whose names sound very similar. In fact, being dyslexic, when I first read this story, when I first heard it when I was living in Germany and I was learning German, I was wondering what the same was. Something with my eyesight and something to do with my dyslexia as the gut works, and I realized that the names were just very similar together. And they had two sons who wanted to pursue their talent. They had an amazing talent for art, something that stood out amongst all the squalor and difficulties in which they lived. But they knew that their father, they knew very well, their father would never be able to financially send them to Nuremberg to study at the academy. But this is something that they talked all the time about. You know, there were many long discussions that the two of them were in the bed with other people as well, just lying in there, realizing that they would be huddled together, talking to one another, dreaming about even after they themselves have been working hard, doing everything that they could to do their chores, to hold their family together, but they just believe so much in their art. They believe so much in the future. They believe so much in their father. They had so much faith inside them. They truly believed that this is what's going to make a difference. So they decided, and they made a pact together in that bed one night and said, we'll toss a coin. And the loser will go down into the neighboring mines. And the mines were someplace that was dangerous, that was damp, and that was dreary. And that his earnings would support the other brother why he attended the academy. Then, when the brothers were ready to make the decision, they decided that they would do it on the faithful day, Sunday. They both went to the church and they prayed. They prayed deeply for one another. They prayed deeply for the future. They prayed deeply for the decision they made. They prayed deeply for the path they were going to go out. And when church was over, what they did was they tossed that coin. And they tossed that coin and one brother won. And the fate that bestowed upon the brother was he was going to go to the Nuremberg Academy. And the other brother was going to go down in the mines. And it was going to go down in those mines and it was going to work and to support the other brother for the 4 years. The goal was that after those 4 years that the brother that had been inside the mines would then go to college. And how he would go to college is that the other brother would have already learned his art and learned his trade, would have applied himself so diligently that at the end of this process would be able to support the other brother with his art. But it was also stated if he could not support him with his art, that he in turn himself would go down into those mines and support him by working deep in those mines. So Albert went down into those dangerous mines for the next 4 years to finance his brother, who worked at the academy with almost immediately was not only a success, he was a sensation, he was a prodigy. Albert's etchings, his woodcuts, his oils were far better than most of his professors. And by the time he graduated, he was beginning to earn commercial fees that were in excess of anything their family had ever seen. So when this young artist triumphantly returned to his village, the Durer family held a feast, a dinner on their lawn to celebrate Albrecht's triumph return home. In fact, it was the first feast that the family had ever had. It was a long and memorable meal. In fact, there were people from all over the village and miles around that came. There was music. There was laughter. Albrecht rose from his honor position at the head of the table to drink a toast to his beloved brother for the years of sacrifice that he had enabled Albrecht to go down and to fulfill his ambition. His closing words, as he stood proudly at the head of the table, a magnificent figure who literally with joy in his heart raised a glass skyward as if looking up into the sun to God, to praise God, to praise his father, to praise his family, but of most all to praise his brother. He said, "Now, Albert, blessed brother of mine, now it's your turn. Now you can go to Nuremberg to pursue your dreams, and I will take care of you." All heads turned in eager anticipation to the far end of the table, where Albert sat with tears streaming down his extremely pale face, because working in the mines he saw very, very little sun. He would go in darkness, so often come out in darkness. He shakingly lowered his head. He was shaking his head from side to side. He was sobbing and repeated over and over again, "No, no, no, no." And finally Albert rose and wiped the tears from his cheeks. His pale face was the only thing that you could see with those hands and those tears running down. He looked down the long table at the faces. He looked at the people that he loved. And then holding his hand to his right cheek, he said softly, "No, brother. I cannot go to Nuremberg. It is too late for me. Look, look what 4 years in the mine have done to my hands. The bones in every finger have been smashed at least once. And lately I've been suffering from arthritis that's so bad that I cannot right now even hold this glass in front of me to hold it up, even though it's how my heart feels, to return your toast, much less do delicate lines that punctuate a canvas. To work with the brush, I could not even hold it. No, brother. For me, it is too late. More than 450 years have passed since that story was told, or that story happened. By now, Albert Dürer's hundreds of masterpiece portraits are all over the world. In fact, they're probably one of them in every one of the greatest museums around the world. He's one of the most famous, one of the most successful, one of the most widely known artists in the whole world. He's known for his silver sketchings. He's known for his watercolors. He's known for his charcoal. He's known for his wood cuttings. He's known for so many things that he has done. But one of the things he's most obviously known for is the praying hands. Because you see, one day, to pay homage to his loving brother, as he took care of his whole family, with his art, with the commissions, with the fees that he enjoyed, he wanted to give in a lasting contributing piece for his brother. He wanted his brother to feel the love and the sacrifice that he had done for him. And many of us know this. It was originally titled The Hands, but very quickly after being produced, it was called The Praying Hands. It's considered one of the most beautiful pieces that have been ever done. In fact, they talk about the perfection of the lines in which it was drawn. They talk about the perfection of the piece in which it was created. They talk about it as the perfect formation where you've got the perfection of what humans can do, co-create with God, and the outcome of a family. In fact, they talk about it as the ultimate piece that shows the ultimate sacrifice. In fact, it's considered the piece that tells the whole world, reminds them of the co-creation that we have with God, reminds the whole world of the co-creation that we have with others. It reminds the whole world of the ultimate sacrifice that a servant leader can make, that gives up so somebody else can get up. It reminds the whole world, as if we ever need to be reminded, that there's nothing great is ever achieved on our own. And truly, that's how I feel and how I feel about Team In Spirit. Because In Spirit, too, is encouraged to support. We are all here because of a co-creation with our Maker and with God. We are all here together because two people got together. We are all here because we stand on the shoulders of others. We are all here and we all have the opportunity to create greatness because of the co-creation we create with our Maker, the co-creation we make with everybody that's part of our lives. So as we go through the day today, we remember the praying hands and understand that all great things are a creation are because of who we are and what it is that we do together. So with everyone that you meet today, take a greater time to acknowledge that person. Just the fact that we share the planet together, just the fact that they're there with us. Instead of just looking down, look up, look into their eyes, look into their heart, give them a smile of encouragement. Treat them with the same love that those brothers treated one another, the support that they gave to one another. You can give that to a stranger. You can give that to everybody. Because the world that we co-create together will be so much happier when everybody approaches it with the love, the respect of those praying hands, with the understanding that only greatness is created together. So have a God-filled, gorgeous, beautiful day today. Why? Because you deserve it. Because you lovingly acknowledge and know that we're co-creating it together, that we share this planet together, and greatness will be created together. Have a God-filled, gorgeous, beautiful day. We love
it. You know, Mark, it's interesting as Garrett shares each and every day, but today especially, because when we look out there and we see some of the I don't know, just the garbage that goes on within our own profession, where we see great companies launching, we see great companies that are already in business, and then we see sometimes overzealous distributors who want to backbite and try to tear down a company or an individual that literally has a reputation. I think this is a good segue for where we're going, because Garrett made it very clear. We can coexist. We can co-create this beautiful profession if we'll realize that we've got to separate the hype from the reality, the scams from the legitimate companies, and really help lift each other up. If you're in Zengo and I'm in Monavi, that we're not competitors that have to tear each other down. We can be friendly competitors, and we can move together to make this a better profession, which is part of what the Distributors Rights Association does. But I'm reminded of the relationship that I had with Phil Longnecker of Cutting Edge Media, because here I am building a lead generation company, he's building a lead generation company, but yet we were friends, and we didn't have to kill each other off by making slanderous and nasty remarks about each other.
You know, Troy, it's 100% right. I believe there's business enough for each of us out there, for every company. There's certainly no such thing as saturation. And, you know, Troy, I worked in the financial services industry years ago, and when you're in that type of industry, you tend to run into everybody in that industry. Well, when you're in network marketing, you tend to run into people who are in network marketing. And I will tell you this. When you put down one, you put down all. You make the outside world look at you like, why should I get involved with that? Because these people are always backbiting each other. Is that a place where I need to be? No, we need to lift each other up, because you know what? It's not about the company you're in. It's about the company you keep. It's about who you are as an individual and leader.
Well, you know, you hit it right on the head there. You know, we live on an island that at the height of the real estate boom, we had a population of 7,000, and we had 3,500 of those people that were registered as licensed real estate agents. And it never seemed to amaze me when I would see a brand new real estate broker come onto the scene, because they had been with somebody else, they had learned the trade, they had grown as far as they could grow, and they were really, really, really willing to step out on their own. And periodically, we would see the same thing happen in this industry as we see in network marketing. You'd see a new real estate agent break out on their own and start their own brokerage, and all of a sudden you'd hear backbiting. Well, that person can't be trusted, and do you know why they left this business? And every time I heard stuff like that, I would say, well, I'll never do business with that person, because there's always room for growth. And although we may not always agree with people, you know. I've blogged lately, and I've written some stuff on this new company, Yoli, and their founders. And I've made it very clear, not all the time do I agree with what their founders have done, what they have said, how they've done their business, but they've always acted in ethical manners. Just because I may not agree with something based on my experiences or my personality doesn't mean that you go out there and backbite them. And lately I've seen people, distributors, both in their prior company, Zengo, and in their company, you know, attack each other. And I'm thinking, there's no reason for this. You know, this is a great industry. And you and I have been around the block enough. We've got friends in almost every company out there. And just because they may be competitors or they may be in a company that's a little bit different than ours, it doesn't make them bad people. It means that they're out there building a business based on what they need for their life. And I think that's what we've got to let our listeners know today. It doesn't matter what company that you're in. If it's a legitimate company, it has a viable product, it has a servant leadership at the top where they really care about everybody else plus themselves, not just in it for them, and you have an upline who really loves their team, and they're willing to go out of their way, kind of like Garrett does, like Jim Gilhouse, like Tom Chenault, like these guys do, to really help their team grow, then you know that you're with an organization. I remember when Tom Chenault brought Greg Arnold onto his radio show to be his co-host. You know, that's somebody that's not really ever been in radio, and Tom said, come on in here, man, let's get you going. That's leadership. You and I are doing this show together and just having a ball. You know, and this was Jim Gilhouse's show. He's the host, but he's off this week doing some other things. And he said, guys, can you just come in and help me out? He doesn't ask what company we're in. He doesn't worry about us trashing his reputation. He honestly understands we're here to better the profession in which we're in, to give good advice. And gosh, buddy, I mean, that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yes, and how many times have you and I trained on, if you can't be passionate about the company you're in, find one that you can be passionate about. So somebody leaves, they leave.
Yeah.
People come in and out of our lives all the time, in every walk of our life, in every avenue of our life, for a reason. Sometimes it's to affirm. Sometimes it's to teach us a lesson. But lesson learned, move on. I am of the opinion that if we nurture somebody strong enough, they're not going to want to leave. If we give them what they need strong enough, you know, they're going to stay with us, but maybe not. So the real estate industry is a pretty good example, because you know what, you train somebody really well, and if they really want the big money, they're going to go out and work on their own. Here's the beautiful part about MLM. It works just like that. If somebody gets really strong, they start building a business bigger and better than you, and you continue to override their business. That is sweet.
Hey, that's the way it is. And you know, right before we got on this show today, I had a good friend of mine. He's in a different company call, and he said, Troy, I've been offered a position with a new launch company. Can you do a little bit of research? And I said, sure. I said, tell me a little bit about it. And he was sharing about it, and he said, Troy, I've got the whole system, and there's no system over there, and the company has said, why don't you come in and really put this together? And he was excited. And, Mark, I got excited for him. He wasn't trying to sponsor me. He was just totally excited and passionate about his company. And when I went over and looked at his company, I did get passionate for him, because this is a company that is literally offering a product that I've not seen in our industry before. And they've teamed up with some strategic partners that are publicly traded health companies. And it's like, oh my gosh, I'm excited for you, and I'm going to go over here and do some, my due diligence. We'll do some blogging. He was all excited because he finally talked to somebody that he knew he couldn't recruit, because I'm not looking for a new company. He knows I'm passionate about what I do. He knew that I would take a personal interest in his success and what he was doing, and it's like, oh my gosh, man, I am so excited for you. And that's the way it's supposed to be right there. It's not supposed to be, well, if you're not on my team, I'm not going to talk to you type deal. I mean, that's kind of like, I don't know, high school crap, you know, and we don't need to be that way. We need to be true servant leaders no matter what company we're in. And you hit something here that I think is important when we talk about the passion for what we're doing. You know, Art Williams used to say all the time, if you're going to be in my business, then you need to be as passionate as I am. And if you can't get passionate about what you're doing, and finally realize that the whole mission here is not selling life insurance and mutual funds, but it's changing people's lives. If you can't get passionate about that, then you're probably not in the right place. And if you'll call me on the phone, I'll try to find a company for you. And I look now today, some 30, almost 32, 33 years after that, and I see some companies like YTB, your travel biz, that was launched by a former regional vice president in A.O. Williams. I see guys from Excel that broke their teeth on A.O. Williams. I see people, excuse me, in these new companies who broke their teeth, and they realized, okay, this was a good practice company, but it's time for me to move on. And sometimes that's going to happen. We're going to be with a company. We're going to grow. We're going to learn. We're going to grow as a person. But then we're going to hit that height, and all of a sudden there is no more duplication that can be had, because we've reached the same level of leadership as the people that are training us. And when that takes place, one of two things will happen. Either the underlying leader will go on to expand, build a newer system, a little bit more broader system, and they will take their place in that company as a top leader, or else they will realize, you know what, even the leadership running the company is going in a different direction and at a different level, and I need to break away and do something new. That doesn't make them wrong. It's kind of like politics. Although there can be a left and a right side, and periodically we all know that politicians screw up, so there can be a right and wrong side. In the end, when you really get it down to brass tacks, the majority of politicians really do love this country, and they really do want what's best for the country. They just see it out of two different lenses, and that's what we've got to look at in network marketing sometimes. Just because somebody leaves the company and joins another doesn't mean they don't like the profession. It means that they love the profession enough to say, come on, let's get something fresh, something new. Let's expand the profession and make it happen. And I know how you are, so if I'm wrong, you know, you tell me. But that's just the way I'm seeing it this morning.
No, that's 100% right. You can't begrudge them. You cannot begrudge anybody their right to see it better and move on. However, I was speaking with a young lady yesterday, and her husband's a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
He's flown 28,000 miles,
whoa,
hours in his career. And so if you're in a business and you say, I'm leaving this business, it doesn't work, and you've been in it, but it hasn't been in you, then you really haven't given it a shot. You're going to be one of those people who flits from company to company but doesn't enjoy any real success. But if you have outgrown your mentorship, you have to find a new mentor, and if you cannot find it cross-line within the company or from the head of the company, then you have to go someplace where you can, because you know what? If you don't continue to grow, you wither. And so I 100% agree with that analogy.
Well, you know, it's just I did a blog post last night, and basically the title of the blog post had to do with hypocrisy. And I put a little snippet in that basically said, you know, MLM is like a church, and that's why some people don't want to join it, is because it's full of hypocrites. And I looked at that a long time before I wrote it, because I see that. I see people that they get excited about what they're doing, and as long as you're a part of their team, then everything's cool. But as soon as you decide you've got to go somewhere else, then all of a sudden they start to act like hypocrites. And something that we really want to drive into our listeners is the fact that you don't have to be a hypocrite. You can love people. You know, Tim Sanders, the former chief solution officer at Yahoo, wrote a book called Love is the Killer App. And in his book, it basically said, you know, just love people. Share the wealth. Share the news. There's plenty of room in this profession. You know, and I'm a firm believer in that. When I look at life insurance and I look at real estate and I look at the medical profession, every profession out there, that's a professional profession, just like network marketing. There's always growth. There's always plateaus. There's highs and lows. And people are constantly growing. And it's funny, because when I go into my MD and I ask him a question, he'll tell me what I need to know. But when I get a specific question that I have to ask and he doesn't know the answer, he doesn't pretend he knows the answer. He says, you know what, I can refer you to somebody else that would be better at that than I am. And, you know, Mark, you and I have both done that. We sometimes find people that don't qualify for our teams for whatever reason. Sometimes they're better than we are. Sometimes we realize that they're looking for a different type of company because of their personal passions. And we have no problem saying, hey, let me do a three-way. Let me get you on the phone with a leader in another company because I think they can help you better than I am. And we do that with trainers. You know, I don't know where John Maxwell would be today if he did the Catalyst Conference and the only person up there speaking was him. But he gets every different type of person up there and lets them share all kinds of different philosophies, which causes people to go away with nuggets of information that'll work. And with 60 seconds left, I just love doing this to you, with 60 seconds left, let's leave here with something passionate. Give our listeners something that if nothing else, they can take away that nugget that they need.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. You know, network marketing is an article of faith. You have to see the end without any evidence. You have to make the journey without any proof of success, because you will get there if you believe strong enough. My greatest analogy to that is Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade. He comes to the point where he's about to get to the Holy Grail, and there is an abyss that he has to cross with no visible means of support. Anybody in their right mind would say, I'm not going to fall into a bottomless pit, but he sticks his foot out in faith, and an invisible bridge rises up to meet him. When you go out in faith, great and mighty forces will come to your assistance. It happened to me personally. I'm sure it's happened to Troy. You just, and it has nothing to do with a specific religion or belief. It just works. It's a universal law that can't be violated. So tap into it and have a great, successful day, week, year.
Folks, have an awesome time. Bye-bye now.